CliffCentral.com.
All righty. It is a Wednesday. It's already the 6th of October, and we are live this Wednesday morning, keeping you company and helping you to start your day off right. We've got Gilly Upto with us this morning as our special guest. We've got Bulelo Tinta, and Bulelo is in Tsitsikamma. He's at the Otter Trail. And it looks like there are a lot of people running around in the background there trying to get things ready for the day. So what happens today there, Mbulelo? I mean, is there something, is today an actual run?
Yeah, so there's actually two different races. We've got the challenge tomorrow, which is has an 11-hour cutoff for the 42K run. And today you have to like do a qualification process to see where you start and which batch you start in. It's called a prologue. And then you run like it's basically 3 kilometers directly up a mountain, basically. And then time will let you know exactly where you start. Then tomorrow they go, and the time limit for them is 11 hours. And then the time limit for the really fast guys that'll be on Saturday is nine hours. So yeah, all the activity starts today. And yeah, it's awesome, man.
Yeah, I'm with Gilly. Awesome, I'm with Gilly when it comes to like running. Only something that's chasing me is going to make me run, and it's got to have teeth and claws, and you know.
Yeah.
Do you? What happens if like an average person did the Otter Trail like now? Like I went, no training. Like what would happen to me? How long would it take me?
Have you ever run before? Like, is a park run like a mission for you? Yeah, are you like one of those? I've done a park run.
I judge my running. This should tell you a bit about my running skills. I judge my run in minutes, not kilometers.
Oh no! Then no. Then that's not going to work. No.
What happened to me? Like, would I die? Would it just take me 3 days?
No, you wouldn't. Number one, the Otter Trail is very unique. You're not just allowed on it. It's not Table Mountain where you can just take a selfie so you can tell everyone how nice your life is. Yeah. So this trail is actually closed to the public for the rest of the year unless you book the hike, which is booked like 18 months in advance. So you can't actually get a spot. So that's quite unique. But you know, Gilly, that wouldn't work. You got to train for. There's no, in road running, there's people cheering for you and water tables and none of that crap here. Here there's serious people doing serious things. Yeah. Mountain running's not for yuppies.
Wow.
People are just dying to run for 9 hours that you have to book 18 months in advance, eh? Just cannot wait to run for 9 hours.
Sounds like hell. It sounds like absolute hell to me. I would never be able to do that. I do admire people who push themselves to those limits, but I've said to you before, with a trail run like this, or more famously, the Comrades Marathon, as soon as that first person has crossed the finish line, the rest should just stop where they are and go home. Because nobody cares, you know.
But on a very serious note, like it's nice to be like Gilly's actually given us a nice transition. It's nice to be around people that commit to something serious. You know, like a whole bunch of people that know how to commit to something serious is a lot. Like we were talking about it before. I don't like people that live their life la di da anyway. So I really love being. And COVID did this. It separated me from people that are intense. Like you got to be intense to do this kind of thing. And it's my type of people, so I've loved being here, and that whole feel is very, very different to being back home. Yeah.
That sounds very nice. I'm so glad you're in your community. Robin says, please show us Mbulelo's shoes. Does anyone else want to see Mbulelo's shoes? So Robin Badger has got a serious thing for your shoes. What shoes are you wearing now? Are you ready to go?
I don't know. I mean, I've got my serious trail runners on. Let me see if I can take them off. I'm not going to be like Nina Hasty and try and put them on a only fans for feet or shoes or whatever. These are the top of the lines. These are the Range Rovers of this running world.
Jeez. Yeah, like that looks like it could run for 9 hours. But
yeah, no, I'm telling you, Gilly. I'm telling you, I've grinded at the gym for this moment. This is what I live for.
I was in a sneaker shop yesterday. And I was with a girl who was buying her shoes, and she was looking at these shoes, and she said, "Well, don't you like the look of those ones for men?" And I was like, "Those don't look like men's shoes. Those look like shoes that like a lesbian would buy." And she was horrified. She was like, "It actually put her off buying them for herself." And what I meant was, they looked They look quite, you know, some shoes do look a bit lesbian. You know what I mean?
What does that mean, Gareth?
I know what you mean. It's like any woman who drives a Subaru, I presume you're a lesbian.
Yeah. Or if you spend a lot of time in the gardening section at, you know, Builder's Warehouse, for example, I think that's...
That doesn't sound like a lesbian. That sounds like a middle-aged man.
Well...
Do you know that they give people over 60 get, I think it's 60 get discounts every Wednesday at Builder's Warehouse? I know this because my father enjoys that. But
I didn't know
that. It sounds like the shoe of a middle-aged man that you're talking about. And Gareth, well, I got to tell you, you know.
Middle-aged man, lesbian, potato, potato. You know, it's kind of, they have the same interests. they like fixing things. I mean, the sole of the shoe was very,
They like fixing things. They like women. And they like, good quality shoes. I think it sounds good. Sounds like a good shoe, and I think you need to get a pair.
Yeah, all right. Well, then I'll go back today and I'll see. But Robin says...
And then to seal it off, Subaru station wagon, lesbian,
yes,
definitely.
Yes, that's exactly
definitely.
Right.
Definitely. Absolutely. 100%.
The same Robin who's really into shoes, she says, I like those lesbian glasses, the wraparound ones, like Oakley's. You know those? You know which ones we mean, yeah.
I know exactly what she's talking about.
By the way, we're not being disparaging. These are just things that tend to be a stereotype because they're probably true. And, you know, if you've ever been to a Builder's Warehouse on a weekend, you'll know what I'm talking about. So these are things you see.
I mean, I've tried to understand. I do get very, when I walk into a hardware store, I sort of walk in and then I let it absorb me like, the mothership. Like, I know that I'm not going to know. Once I pass the doors, I know I'm not going to know what's happening. So I just go in and then hope somebody will collect me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they always do. There's always somebody in the store, like all these dudes who are like, can I help you? Can I help you? And I'm like, thank you for saving me. Because I would have just drifted aimlessly through these aisles until somebody comes to get me. I don't know where I'm going.
And they would have would have been selling you things like a star screwdriver or a clout nail or something like that. And you would have been like, oh, I didn't know I needed that. That's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I've always wondered what it's like to shop as a woman. Like, you're famous and you're good looking. Whenever you walk in, do you ever get the creepy, like, where the guys... too helpful. Like, I've always wondered, I've always tried to see whether that happens to women. And I mean, you look like you look.
I'm not famous, but.
You are.
You know.
I kind of are.
Okay. Fake humble, let's do it.
No. What, I don't know. You know, no one place is any creepier than another. I can tell you that.
Got you.
And at least at the hardware store, they're helpful. You know, some people are, most men are creepy without being of any use.
No, that's true. They're not even. There's no utility. Yeah. No pragmatic use for them.
Exactly.
So Christine says, I'm listening to this. I'm a lesbian. You're so right. See? So there we go. We've got at least one from the lesbian community agreeing with us.
And that's all you need. Like, as the old saying goes, to confirm a fact, one lesbian is all you need.
That's how the saying goes.
I must be a little bit lesbian because I'm really enjoying building things. I've been doing some DIY around the house recently. And, you know, I put up some shelves the other day. I fixed a cupboard. So I installed a little fridge and then built the cabinets around it, which I'm very proud of. I'm quite chuffed with myself. It's nice to do these things.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
That is really, really, that's amazing. Honestly, yeah. Like you do feel very accomplished when you do something.
You do.
Like that.
You really do. And you, like, you can't stop looking at it. You keep walking there into that room and going, wow, that looks amazing. Because you're so chuffed with yourself.
I fixed a cupboard in my bathroom that's like a little, it's like a door and the hinge was coming off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's bothered me for ages. And then I fixed it. I like took it out, like fixed the little, there's like a little hinge and everything. And I just tightened it up and I was like, And I was like, I opened it like seven times
so
a day just to admire my work.
I think that's amazing.
But you,
it's a good feeling.
You need to stop. There's a line. Like I love what you guys are saying. I'm also getting into that age.
Mm.
But there's a point to stop. And that point is when you start talking about the sort of utility of pallets. I don't know if you know people that discover pallets and they tell you, oh my God, do you know what you can do with pallets? You can turn them into a chair, you can turn them into a base or a bed. Like there's those people. Yeah, I'm sure you know them. Like that's where you stop. Because then you start.
Yeah, I don't want DIY. You don't want DIY to become your personality.
Mm-mm.
Yes. Yeah. Well said, Gilly. That's
also,
exactly
then
it.
Also then you become too useful to people, and you don't want that. It's like having a bucky. You don't. You know that's. You're gonna have friends. You're never gonna know if they're your friends because of your personality or because they need you to move something. You know.
That's right. And people with buckies get abused way more than anyone else. If you're a friend and the people are constantly calling you to use your bucky, they're not really your friends. You must accept that now.
That's true. Unless you got the bucky to get friends, in which case, well done.
Well, I mean, DIY is a bit like cultish, almost like Bulelo and his Otter Trail people. It is a bit cultish. That's how it works.
Yeah.
So Matt says, I'm not sure which builders you go to, Gilly, but here in Durban, they're so short-staffed, it's like the general manager is the cashier. That's ridiculous.
That's terrible. I mean, you know, there's a job shortage crisis, but who knows? Maybe there's also a budget crisis in terms of hiring people.
That's probably it.
Or there's not a lot of lesbians in Durban. Let's also put that on the test. Maybe lesbians don't like humidity.
You know. I think that would be tragic because, as far as I know, like the more gay people you have in your city, the better the city is. I once was listening to something where they said, if you want to know what's a great place to live, go where gay people are because they have a generally speaking a good standard for life and they've got expendable income. So they choose the best places with the best amenities and the best access and the most, obviously the most like social freedom. So that's where you want to live, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes sense. I mean, it's also a generalization, but yeah, it makes sense. Certainly, you know, Kabul is not as good as San Francisco, just given that's kind of clear.
But I imagine if you're a gay person, you might want to get out of Kabul if you can.
Yes, I think you should try while you still can. Jeremy says bucky abuse is a real thing and wedding cars. Now, I didn't even think about that, but you've got to be careful what kind of car you have because you will be abused. That's a very good point.
Sorry, what's a wedding car?
So if you have a really smart car or a sort of different color car or it's something quite special, like maybe it's vintage.
Or like a vintage
car. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Some asshole is not even your friend. Next thing you know, you're busy, you know, kind of letting them use your car for their wedding. Not good. A friend of mine actually.
I met this guy. We were shooting a show about like. Part of the one aspect of the show was old cars, and there was this man in Oudtshoorn who had this old vintage car, and he just absolutely loved driving people around on their weddings.
Really?
To you know, yeah, he loved it. He thought it was great.
Yeah, matric dances are another one. That's a good point.
Yes.
Like when people, you know, if you drive a nice car, then people come up to you and they ask you, would you mind letting us borrow your car for my matric dance? You're like, what? Just hire a car. Yeah. I mean, like, otherwise, just go on whatever you've got. Nobody actually sees what car you arrive in at your matric dance. I don't remember. Yeah. When I went to my matric dance, I didn't even remember who dropped me off.
I remember. We went in a limo.
You did? Okay. So, fancy. Very fancy.
Yes, absolutely.
A white car is often used as a wedding car, but most cars are white, aren't they, Florence? I mean, that's like 90% of the cars.
Generally speaking, I think it's like a fancy white car, like an old Rolls Royce or something, like a vintage Rolls Royce, you know.
So for black people, just so you know, is that's just a Mercedes-Benz C-Class. We haven't had money long enough for us to be sort of venturing out into Rolls Royces and things like that. So it is murder being the first one to go to university as a black person and actually have a half-decent car. I understand what you mean now. I didn't know that was called a wedding car per se.
Yes, you got it.
The my favorite ones are those old politician Mercedes-Benzes, the ones that were used by the old National Party politicians. Remember those long, very flat ones?
E-Class.
They probably considered quite vintage now, but I remember that they were all over, and all the smartest people, like especially, because South Africa is always a couple of years behind the curve. In the 80s, those were the cars that if you drove one of those, you were very important, you know, one of those Mercedeses. Ridiculous. So here, Zandi says, Zandi Mseleni says, DIY is much better than trail running. How do you like that, Bulelo?
That's okay. I'm in my zen right now. So no. as my cult,
nothing can touch me, bro. Nothing can touch me.
There we go. Gilly, you need to come on more often. You get it. What's a female mensch? Is there a female mensch?
A mensch is a mensch.
A mensch is a mensch.
A mensch is a mensch is a mensch. All right. You're a mensch.
Thank you.
We still call those long slup mercs a PW Buerta merc, says Tracy. She's exactly right. That's those big ones, and they were wide.
Long slup.
Yeah, long, exactly long, long and about, slup. Yeah. slup is kind of like floppy or like
a slap chip.
Yeah, like a slap chip, exactly.
Slap chip. Nobody hears slap chip.
A long slap, Mercedes.
Bolelo, I'm worried about the fact that your set is being deconstructed right now.
Yes.
Like, where are you going to have your cult leader worship ceremony later?
No, in the ad break, I went and spoke to the guys and I said, the lighting in here is going to be terrible. I'm not going to look like Jesus Christ of Nazareth. If you guys don't fix it now, I'm going to sacrifice you like babies back in the day, or women that could read, burn you at the stake.
Okay.
Yeah, so
great. That's so great.
Yeah,
and that really got them moving. Hey, look at them.
Hey, Gilly, let me tell you something. People respond to incentives, and death seems to be a half decent one to get them going in the morning.
Nice.
You know?
Nice. I see why you're the leader.
Yeah. Okay. You tolerate no nonsense.
Some of us are born into it.
So what's on your agenda here? Do you do the baby sacrifices first thing in the morning, or do you do those later in the day? And do you force people to eat? Do you force people to eat grass and drink petrol and be sprayed in the face with doom, or does that happen later in the day as well?
What you do is like back in the day, what the proper dictators used to do is because Nature's Valley has sort of one road to get here is. You impale old heads, and I mean, the heads I've impaled are not real, but I've obviously got a guy to make it, so that when people come, just the threat, because often the threat of violence is far more powerful than the violence itself. So, like heads are already impaled on coming in, and you're aware that there's consequences, much of the spirit of sort of a Toke Mada or those types, you know what I mean?
Even Shaka did that. He put people on.
Exactly.
Yeah, but he put the whole body on, not just the head.
Yeah. So I mean, there's bloody heads all the way on Nature's Valley Road coming in here, and everybody's very, very clear. So you know.
Nice.
Yeah.
So nice. Daniela says, and this is a good point when we get to those cars that we were talking about earlier. Daniela says, last weekend I watched a guy fly in and out with his helicopter for lunch in Hartbeespoort Dam. I mean, why drive when you can fly? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Very nice.
Ooh, yeah.
Could not agree more.
I mean, obviously.
Although I will say, you know, Elon Musk says the reason we don't have flying cars is because of the noise. They haven't figured out how to make flying cars. They'd be too noisy. That was his assertion the last time he was asked that question. And I never thought about it. And I was like, oh, damn, that's something we don't even think about. Like, those things would be noisy right now if they made them like drones. You know?
Right. Because you can hear a drone, even a little, you know, sort of thing as big as maybe two, three hands.
So imagine a car-sized drone, and imagine as many cars as are on the road were making that sound.
No, it would be outrageous. Yeah. Outrageous.
It'd be a nightmare.
But, you know, if you can't chop it, chop it. That's what I always say.
Of course. As you know, somebody who has that option, that's a terrific option to have.
Yeah.
So Neil says, I've owned 6 Hilux Buckies since 2008. I totally agree with the friend abuse. I've changed to a Fortuner, a.k.a. a mommy wagon, so now those types of friends have disappeared. Yeah.
Neil just wanted to know who his real friends were.
That's right.
When people move house, then they always call up that friend with a Bucky. Because it's easier than hiring a truck or hiring a Bucky yourself. And the friend is like, "Yo, it's all here. It's just as long as you pay the fuel and don't crash. You know, don't overload it." Then it's usually fine.
But Also, there's another side to that. Is Neil, you know, Neil may have actually formed his personality around being the Bucky guy, and
that's
eventually you start to love yourself. And now Neil must be feeling kind of crap as like...
Now Neil is like, who am I?
No.
Exactly.
Where do I fit in?
Shit, they really didn't like me. I was starting to think they were into me. You know what I mean? Like, I thought they liked me for who I am or whatever. No, Neil, it was the highlights, but the fact that you could pull a small house.
Absolutely. Speaking of moving, let me tell you the story. So in my building, there's a WhatsApp group, right? The classic building WhatsApp group. I hope I didn't tell the story the last time. I don't know how this would have come up. But in the building WhatsApp group, a very angry person who was moving out of the building wrote a message. And the message said, you know, I left a trestle table in the entrance hall of the building when I was moving out, and it is now gone. And I would like to know who took it and why. Right, put this in the group, and then the people from the body corporate were like, you know what, there's cameras in the entrance hall, we will check and get right back to you. Then somebody tried to check the cameras, then the cameras were down, then somebody figured out how to get the cameras. One woman who runs the body corporate, who is very organized, she is exactly the person you want running the body corporate, she's an accountant, she found the video footage of the entrance hall, and guess who took the man's trestle table.
The man.
Was it not the man?
Yeah, always.
Oh, wow.
It is a video of himself taking his own trestle table.
Son of a bitch. And he obviously wanted everyone else to pay for a new table for him.
But before, you don't understand, before he got the footage, he was trying to sue the body corporate.
Oh, yeah.
He wanted accountability. He went to the police station around the corner because he wanted to report it. He reported himself. And I know, and I feel like I know what happened there. This is the second part of the story, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think what happened was he took the trestle table, right, absentmindedly with all the other things that he took and put them on the Bucky. And the Bucky was driven by the friend. And I think the friend stole his trestle table.
Oh, good point.
Or,
that's a good one.
Or he's just a bullshit artist who wanted someone else to pay for a new trestle table for him.
Yes, but I mean, then like having something more important stolen, and definitely don't do it in an entrance hall where there's a camera. I mean, he's not exactly a mastermind, like, you know, he wouldn't be able to start a cult like Mbulelo. He doesn't have the kind of mental fortitude.
I'm just, whenever I hear these stories, it always pleases me, and it gives me like huge internal happiness to know that there are people running these body corporates, like you said, those really efficient and organized and sorted people who they just know where everything is at any time. They can figure out any problem. They really...
It's very reassuring.
Those are the people we need to vote for in these upcoming elections, I've got to tell you. And sometimes they're a bit Karen-ish. You know what I mean? Like, they can be a bit Karen-y.
Yes.
But they are essential to a well-functioning society.
No, they get things done. They get things done. The Karens get things done, if nothing else.
I would love for a Karen to be our ward councillor in my neighborhood. I tell you what, we'd never have problems because she'd be on the phone as soon as anything went wrong. Why's my water off? When are you going to fix it? When are you going to fix it? Phoning them every 5 minutes. Is it fixed yet? Is it fixed yet?
Speaking to the manager of the water in 2 seconds.
Exactly. You want those people. And I mean, listen, I'm no fan of the Karens, especially through, you know, coronavirus and lockdowns and them reporting people and all that shit. But these days, I would rather have a Karen running my neighborhood than anything else. They're amazing.
But you know why Germany works, a large part. If you ask any German why Germany works, is they'll tell you it's because we're the best in the world at two things, designing cars and complaining. Because the Germans pride themselves on being great complainers, which is why things work. So I totally
agree.
They
complain about every little thing. I spent a lot of time in Germany now. But they get whatever they want. That society is like, you cannot believe the benefits these people have. You know, I when I was in Berlin recently, I was doing a show at a bar, and a young woman came up to me afterwards she's a South African who had moved from South Africa to Berlin just before COVID hit. And she said to me, she's a filmmaker, and I said to her, you know what, you've done the right thing. You know, you've gone to where there's a thriving industry, you know, but just the fact that you've left wherever you are and gone to a new place is good for your filmmaking.
Sure.
For your creative senses. I was like, you've done the right thing. You know, it's great. You can, you know, grow and learn and be amazing. And she looked at me and she said, or not. And I was like, huh? And she said, or not. She was like, you don't understand. She's like, I could have a career here and also just live a normal life. She's like, I don't have to be the best and the most amazing and the blah, 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 blah. She was like, I'm actually enjoying my life. Like in South Africa, it feels very do or die for me. Like I have to be the best. I've always had to be the best to get out of every like a difficult circumstance I've ever been in. I've always had to like fight so impossibly hard because if you're not on top of the pile, you are drowning, especially in a creative industry. And she was like, yeah, I can just live. I can just live my life. And I was like,
it makes a lot of sense.
Wow.
But yeah. there is less pressure because things work, right? So you can can actually sit at home and paint or do whatever, and then there's someone to pay for your medical bills if you have to go to hospital because you paid your taxes.
You're not gonna you might not be wealthy or you might not be like the biggest success or you might not, but you're not gonna die, you know?
Yeah. Well, here's a good point from Derek. He says, Karens are nature's litmus test for something that could potentially become a problem in the future. So we should be more appreciative of them, really. We've been very mean about Karens over the last 2 years, and maybe it's time that we started to appreciate them a bit more. All right.
A necessary evil.
Yeah. Bulelo, I see they're dismantling and changing your background by the second. Every moment we see something new going on, it's definitely turned into a much more dangerous part of the cult agenda this morning.
The thing which you may or may not get, again, you're born with it, is that a totalitarian power is absolute or it doesn't exist at all. So I've made them change the entire place. I don't do small changes. Otherwise, people don't know, you know, where the father's fist lies. So, I don't expect you to get it, but I'll keep updating you as it goes.
Yes. All right. Now, listen, it's time for us to welcome someone to the show. Sneh Gasa moved to the U.S. 9 years ago from Durban. She went over there to be a nanny during her gap year, and she intended to come back to South Africa, but it didn't happen, and she's very happy there by the sounds of things. Hey, Sneh, how are you?
Hello. I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Good. Can I just compliment you on your unbelievable sound?
Thank you.
Yes, someone has got decent equipment there on that side. So, Sneh, first of all, I mean, welcome to the live show. I know you've listened for a while, and it's great to have you on board. In America are you?
I'm in Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio.
Wow, Cleveland.
Ooh, Dave Chappelle land.
Yeah.
Dave Chappelle country.
Yeah, you're into comedy, so, yeah, he's like in southern Ohio, but I'm like way up north.
So, Sneh, I mean, how important would you say it is for South Africans to think about the U.S. and for the U.S. to think about South Africans when it comes to, like, this obsession that South Africans have of there's got to be somewhere in the world that's better than here? And you must hear this all the time from your family back home. It's a thing that we do. We love to imagine that just geography would make everything better for us.
No, definitely. I think people, like, ever since I've been here, people have a certain idea, and I think South Africans assume that it must be, like, a lot better to be in America, and I think it depends why you're here or how you get here. Mm-hmm. So I would say that before I came, I thought it would be pretty cool, but I didn't realize some of the things that I've learned just from living here, not necessarily vacationing, so... Something I would say to South Africans now that I didn't know then, you know, kind of like in hindsight, is like, it's not a perfect country, but neither is the U.S. Because if you had a lot of time, like, I could talk all day about just some of the things that here, like, the food here sucks. You guys have had guests before who talk about America, and the food is, like, one of my biggest, you know, hesitations or problems. But South Africa is a good country. Despite, it sounds like weird to say, and sometimes I even feel like, do I have a right to say this? Because I have friends who will say, what do you haven't even been here 9 years. Like, why are you telling us South Africa is a good country? But I think it's honestly one of the best countries in the world. Having not been there in that long and having been born and raised there, I really, really think South Africa is a special country, and it's hard to pin down. Like, even Americans will ask me, you know, because Americans assume, all sorts of things about why people are here. Yeah. Are you a Sudanese refugee? Like, no.
I was about to ask if they ask you where you're from and if they want, if they understand where you're from and what it means to them.
Yeah, and people, somebody was asking, oh, welcome to Ohio. It's so, you know, you must be so thrilled you're here. I'm like, okay. I mean, I wouldn't say thrilled, but it's not bad. Why exactly did you come to the U.S.? Were you escaping an arranged marriage?
I'm like, oh, wow.
No.
So
I came for a gap year. What are you talking about? So these are some of the assumptions. That what do you prefer?
What was the reason you stayed? Because you say you came over for a gap year and you were going to just be a nanny and earn some pocket money and travel a little bit. But what made you want to stay?
You know, it was this opportunity. Like, I worked for an American family. I looked after their kids who were very, you know, badly behaved, at least by the standards I was raised in South yeah. Africa. And the mother, actually, they were very well-educated people, and I wanted to go back to South Africa, maybe do an au pair in Germany. I almost went to the Netherlands. But the family was like, what are you going to do with the rest of your life? And I was like, I don't know. Travel the world. And the mother, she said, are you going to go to college? And I said, maybe I'll figure something out in South Africa. I wanted to go to WITS. I was like, I could go to WITS and figure something out. And she said, would you like to go to college in the U.S.? And I said, sure, but how does that happen? You know, I'm not a diplomat's child. It sounds like these are the type of things only those people could do. And she said, we'll figure it out. We'll help you. You know, we'll figure out the paperwork. But if you want to, our kids really like you. We really like you. You want to stay here, go to school, we'll figure something out. And I took the chance. You know, I was going to go back, but she sought out the opportunity for me. And she said, if you're willing to stay, we're willing to help you out.
Now, a lot of people are asking, why Ohio? Amazing. Because Ohio sucks. It's almost like the free state. Heinz says it's almost like the free state. It's so boring. Do you agree?
It's like the free state.
I was going to ask.
Shame they don't know that they're in the free state of America.
No. There's a lot of memes, though. I think secretly they know, like, that because they get made fun of. Like, it's by the lake, like the one of the Great Lakes, so yeah. It's sometimes referred to as the mistake on the lake, and I think people know, like, they have a complex, like, the rest of America makes fun of them. Like, when LeBron James left, they were so butthurt, like, oh, how could he leave us for Miami? And then he came back, and they were like, yay! And then he left again. So, but why Ohio? I had no idea. I didn't even know. I thought Chicago was a state before I came here. Like, I was well-educated. I went to an English-speaking school in South Africa, but I didn't know much about the U.S. So I had a nice family that called me in Cleveland Heights, and they said, hey, we really like you. Would you like to come with us? And honestly, I was willing to go anywhere. I could have ended up in the worst situation. I was so naive. I just wanted to go to America.
Wow.
So, Sneh, I'm curious about whether or not you feel disconnected because you're in a strange place like Ohio, and there probably isn't a lot of culture that you could identify with in terms of the culture that you grew up with in a place like Ohio. Do you feel very disconnected, or are you one of those people who's just able to assimilate really quickly and make it work?
You know, I'm able to assimilate pretty quickly. So even like my accent, like, changed very quickly, like within the first, like, I lived with American kids, and I remember one of the 6-year-old that when I saw the word salmon, I was like, would you like some salmon? Because that's what, and I didn't like a 6-year-old correcting me, like, it's salmon. So quickly I was like, okay, I need to change. I cannot have these kids correcting my every second word.
Yeah. No.
This is, you know, very disrespectful children here. But
you should have been like, shut up, no salmon for you.
And I was like, what did you say? Like, it's salmon. What are you And they always correct everything. That's not how you say that. This is how you say it. So I'm pretty good at assimilating, and I feel like I've made the most of the experience. And there's a lot of, there are international people here, like pockets of the, at the universities, you find, I've met a lot of people from other African countries, from Europe. So, but there is a hole, and I think it's because I haven't been able to go back, like, legally, you know, to stay here on the student visa. There are, like, a lot of rules where once you start the schooling. So I feel, I've almost kind of felt trapped that, you know, I have to stay here. Like, I've heard people talking, like, Chimamanda, the author from Nigeria, Trevor Noah, some, they say the, one of the best things about America is that you can leave. They, one of the things they like, they can come and go as they please. They can go to Nigeria, come back. And I've sort of felt like just really stuck here, and that's made me feel kind of very disconnected and lonely. And Ohio is a very, the winters here suck. Like, it's the middle of the night.
Have you been able to travel at all in America?
Yeah. I've traveled. I did the au pair thing in Phoenix, Arizona as well for 1 year. That was very hot. And
in the desert, wow.
Oh, too hot. They didn't say it was the desert. They said, and I was like, it's the desert. Oh, why are the people living here?
Now you're cold in Ohio. It's not.
Now, the winters are, I have my happy lamp. I have to have the happy lamp because the winters are brutal.
And what is a happy, what is a happy lamp?
Yes.
Oh, it's just this light that like the room is kind of bright right now, and it's this light that I cannot even, if I have it too close to me, it's like, it's because, you know, the, what's the seasonal affective depression disorder. You don't see the sun, you're lacking vitamin D.
Oh, wow.
And I bought this happy lamp where in the wintertime it gets so dark and you haven't seen the sun in 5 months. So I just turn it on and it just like illuminates the room, makes the room very bright, and it's supposed to help uplift your mood a little bit. It's like a,
which college did you end up going to, Sneh?
I started at community college because I was self-paying, you know, that's also another story, because I was not here on a scholarship. The family that said they were going to help me for a little bit, and then, you know, they moved on, and so I was pretty much on my own, and I had this visa that was valid as long as I stayed in school. So I started in community college, self-funded the community college about the first 2 years, and then took a 1 year to get an internship. I worked, saved some money, and then I transferred to a private four-year school. It's called Hiram College. It's just a small college in Ohio. I did the last 3 years, and I just graduated this May. And
congrats.
It was the hard. Thank you.
Congratulations.
What did you eventually end up doing your qualification in?
Business. Who knows what, you know, that's going to lead to.
So now that you've finished studying and you've just graduated, obviously once Corona has sorted itself out and travel's a lot more simple, because we're not all as brave as Gilly. You're so brave, Gilly, to travel.
Yeah.
During Corona. So brave.
So inspirational. So moving.
Gilly, I'm so brave to have all my travels paid for and go do my job all over the world.
I could have never started this cult without you. Just you, so brave.
And Mulele looks like he's at the Met Gala. I'm like, are you? What's happening over there?
No, it's what? It's the South African version.
This is about you.
It's the South African version of the Met Gala.
I'm just starting a cult. Let's not make a big deal about that. Let's talk about Ohio. It's much more interesting.
Now that you've qualified and travel is opening up, what's your plan of action? I mean, you're going to stay in America, because you've stayed there long enough now that they pretty much think you're American, right?
Yes, and being American is easy. Like, you can, you know, if I moved to France, I could never be French. I can have the
right.
But being American, you just got put on the accent and, you know, hand on the heart.
It's because we've been watching them our whole lives. We've been watching every move they make.
It's so easy to really, like, and they're so simple-minded sometimes that just few things matter to them. And then you're part of the, and they don't even understand, like, I could say I'm an American and people don't even understand how visas work, how, like, you don't just waltz into the country and then you get all the immigration benefits. Most people have no idea.
But that's also why.
And so how long until you're a citizen? Sorry, Gareth.
No, go ahead.
I'm in the process. I got married last spring. That's been a year process, you know.
So who's the husband? Did you know him before this, or was it an arranged marriage, like people thought you were first?
Right, it's like you come here for the
Maybe that's why they were asking you, like, are you from an arranged marriage? Because we would like to arrange you a marriage.
You just go, hey, I don't know. I was brought here by a man. I was put in suddenly put me in a wedding dress. I was rushed down the aisle, and then suddenly, you have no idea I was married.
That's excellent.
So who's this guy? Yeah. Who's your husband? Yes. Tell us about him.
So my husband, Gilly will be happy. My husband is an American, but he's Jewish.
Ah.
He's
yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
nice.
I know. But my mother's
Did you have to convert? Did you have to convert?
No, no. You can't. You say your mother has to be Jewish or something like that. You don't convert.
You can convert.
Okay. No, you can convert. It's a 7-year process, though. I have a friend who did it. 7 years.
No, it's not. It's not a 7-year process.
She's like, don't listen to him.
I thought he said 7 years.
It's long, but it's not 7 years. No, okay. Maybe your friend had a Jewish learning disability.
Listen, seven years. 7 years is how long Moses spent in the fucking desert. That's enough. You could walk all the way from Egypt to the Promised Land in 7 years. It's ridiculous.
Well, Sneh spent a year in the Phoenix Desert, so that was enough, maybe.
Yeah.
All right. So this dude. So this dude, he's American, and
he's a white American guy.
White American guy. And what do your family think of that? I mean, how often do you speak to them? Because they must already have thought.
Mind you, Uslethelen, we knew you went to America.
And it's like Umlungu on steroids.
What did they say?
No, I have to be very honest. So, like, I grew up, like, conservative Zulu household. Like, I wasn't allowed to date. Like, I'm one of many siblings. And, yeah, it was, like, I remember being in school, like, primary school, and my sister was standing with a boy by the neighborhood, and they weren't even holding hands. And then she came home, and my father stepped her on the face. Like, don't do that. And it was instilled in me that, like, we don't date. Like, it was just these messages that, you know, we never talked about it, but I knew this is not something to do. So, you know, kind of in America, like, I'm an adult, like, I'm 29 years old, and I met this person, like, in a legit way. It's a real thing. But I was so nervous to tell my family that I'm, like, dating somebody, and I freaked out. And like the day before I got married, I had to come clean, and I told my mom I'm married and I'm getting married tomorrow, and my dad. I still have this thing, like, that it's weird, you know, like,
was your dad going to ask where the American dollar lobola is? Because I'm sure that was an issue. He's like, okay, that's fine. You've made the move. You've decided to go and be an American, but I still am. I'm required by my culture to insist on some kind of lobola. Did that not happen?
It came up, but my dad's is progressive. He said, you know, I don't know, as long as you're happy and he's gonna take care of you. But I know when I come home, that he's gonna say, hey, so what about that? You know, but he was good, and he was so he was so like, you know, we trust you and we're happy for you. And then he FaceTimed with my husband, and, you know, he was like cracking all these jokes with him, and Americans are very literal. So he was not getting it, because my father was like, hey, you speak English. Do you speak English? And he's like, why is your dad asking me if I speak English? I'm like, he's just joking. Like, this is, so he was not, it was a bit of a disconnect, but yeah, it was good. They were happy, and I was not in trouble.
Now, you didn't have a whole lot of people at your wedding, right? I just want to show everybody a picture here. Here's some photographs, because you've shared with us a couple of things, which I love. So here's you and your husband. And you got dressed up in some traditional garb, which is nice. And he tried with like an African type shirt. That's nice of him.
He tried. He got that shirt at like a festival.
Yes. He was like,
is this burning man.
Look at you two. What a beautiful couple. This makes me happy.
That's so cool. That's so cool.
And this is at your graduation. Awesome. And with lots of South African colors on. I love it. There's a flag on you. It's beautiful, Sneh. I'm so happy to see this stuff.
Thank you.
So from what you're saying, obviously, because of a thing that very few people have heard about called COVID, your family couldn't come to the wedding, huh? So I would imagine it wasn't the biggest wedding. It looked like...
No, that's what I was... just the two of us and the officiant. I thought Mulelo. I was thinking Mulelo would be like this. You're like the minimalist guy.
Incredible, because I've always said if I get married, Sneh, you're incredible. Because for me, if I get married, we get married and you're back at the office for the lunch meeting. I don't need the whole chudunta, as you might say.
When Mulelo gets married, he's gonna run to the reception in those shoes that he showed us earlier, and then him and his bride, he's gonna make her climb a mountain for 7 hours and get married at the top of the mountain, and then.
No, alone, because if she loves me, she'll make it back down, and then I know this thing's set. Yeah, she can climb a mountain, but But Sneh, incredible. I just want to say that is awesome. I love that. Two people, that's who you love, and you guys must carry on. Awesome.
Simple. It was simple.
Congratulations.
To the point. It was over within Amazing. 4 hours. The photographer took pictures, went home, cooked some delicious Durban curry, and that's it.
That sounds amazing. You know what?
I was happy for you, but now I'm kind of angry because I wish we'd got married now. Like to find a lady who's willing to do it that quickly.
Are you and your husband talking about kids yet, or is that something that's on the agenda, or am I prying too much?
No. I mean, first of all, it's like once I get the green card, it's like, oh my goodness. Plus, I'm 29, and I'm still trying to, you know, get my feet into the working environment, actually get a job. And something I was thinking about was I've had to work very hard here, like because of the legal restrictions, like how I've actually had to get by is being a domestic helper. Cleaned. You get quite a bit of money doing that in the U.S., like up to $20 an hour. And just today I went to three people's houses, scrubbed toilets, vacuumed, and that's how I've been making my money. And it's something that I credit that to having been born and raised in South Africa, that I didn't come here saying, you know, I'm not going to do this, that there's a certain resiliency. You know, I see people, only few people would be able to do what I've been willing. It's usually the South Africans, the Brazilians, the Thai, the Ecuadorians. We are the ones who are going to stay in America, do just about anything to get money to support ourselves because we don't have families back home. A lot of the people here, they actually have to send money back home.
Yeah.
And we will.
And they're not spoiled.
We're not, and the American people say, oh, they're taking what we are doing. Americans will never do. So we're not short of people looking for us to do these jobs.
You know, it's
always like that with immigrants. It's the reason they immigrants in any country get so much slack. It's because immigrants are willing to do whatever it takes to survive so that they can ultimately thrive and that their kids can thrive.
But that's also
the winning edge, man.
That's also why countries like America have done so well in the past, is because they open themselves up to immigrants, and immigrants work really hard to stay there and to not have to go back to, in some cases, really terrible places that they come from, or because they so desperately want to make it in America. And I think that's something that South Africans are pretty well known for across the world, and it's something we should be proud of. It's like, I think anyone who knows South Africans in Europe, in America, even in Asia and other parts of the world, even in places like Dubai, which are so different, everybody knows South Africans are prepared to do the work. You know, we're prepared to get our hands dirty. We're prepared to get
into whatever. You know, I can't
say whatever.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I can't compare to your story, but just a small anecdote of when I was traveling now, when I was in London, I needed to get a spot at one of the comedy shows, at one of the stand-up clubs. And I couldn't figure out, like, a friend of mine was supposed to organize me a spot. He organized me the one night, but not the rest of the night. And I was there to do work. You know, I was there to actually get on stage and make some progress. And I couldn't get on stage because the one guy didn't organize me a spot. And then another comedian also didn't come through for me. And I said to my friend, I was like, just come with me. We're going to that club, and I'm just going to go there and ask the guy myself. And when I got there, I noticed two things. This is like one of London's top comedy clubs. I noticed two things. One, because I said to her, you know, like in South Africa, I didn't make any progress. The way I succeeded was not by staying at home. I can guarantee, the one way to guarantee not getting a spot on a lineup is to stay at home.
Right.
And so I got up. We went to that place. As I walked in, another comedian said to me, like, what are you doing here? Do you have a spot yet? And I said, well, I'm here to try my luck. And he said, I'll tell you what, I've got 20 minutes. I don't want to do 20 minutes. I'm going to ask the owner if he can give you 10 of those minutes. He goes down. He talks to the guy. The other guy comes up. Eventually, I get a spot. And I got the spot, and I got to go on stage and do my job. And one thing that struck me when I looked around was that I didn't see any local comics there trying to do what I was doing.
Yeah.
There was no British comic there fighting to get on that stage, just going there and being like, oh, if he says no, it'll be embarrassing. And, you know, like, I'll be humbled, but what's the worst that can happen? You know,
yes. That's that resiliency. You know? That's that.
Yes.
That's that. It's hard to, it's, it's a resiliency that South Africans have. And, you know, I was born in 92 and I went to an English speaking school. And in some ways, when I came to be an au pair, I was actually quite privileged. I met Germans or Europeans who were like, I came to improve my English. Mm. And then they were looking at me, how, your English is so good. You're from Africa. Like, yeah, I'm from South Africa. Right. Like, we have 11 official languages. So there's that aspect, but I would say that there is something inside of me through what my father went through, my family, but there is something in the South African spirit. It's our spirit. It's something, you know, when I come to South Africa and I'm at the plane, just lands at OR Tambo, before I even speak to anybody, the energy, the vibe, the collective energy of the country is so powerful, and it's impacted me, and it's something that will stay with me for the rest of my life. And I did not appreciate being South African actually until I came to America. Wow. And this country and my roots have carried me through to, if I wouldn't have done any of this if I had not come from where I came from, the townships of KZN.
That's beautiful.
Wow. That is awesome.
Where exactly in KZN are your family?
Claremont. There's a township in Claremont.
Yeah.
So, Durban. And my father ran some shops and hustled. Then two of us out of, you know, nine kids, only two of us could go to these, you know, English-speaking schools. And that's not something that I want to, even when I've been here, that as hard as it's been, and the cleaning kills my body, you know, it's hard.
It's exhausting work.
I think about my father and the opportunity that I got, that I'm going to ride this one through, and I'm going to make the most of whatever opportunity I get.
Well, I'm so happy to meet you today and to actually hear your story. And really, it's amazing to connect with people from all over the world and to hear what they're up to and to see what they've been doing. And I'm just, I'm blown away by the fact that you've got married, when graduated, you're working your backside off and making a success of yourself. It's terrific. It fills me with all kinds of inspiration and happiness. And I'm very proud of what you're doing out there to keep the South African flag flying, Sne.
Thank you. Thank you, Gareth.
No, it's really
thank
cool.
Thank you. Thank you. I feel very supported. I feel like you guys are behind me, you know, like
100%.
When it gets lonely and it gets sad and, you know, there's those dark moments, especially the winter that's coming. Mm. I listen to you guys and you're like, it's summer. And it's always the opposite, the inverse of us. When Gareth was complaining about the winter time, and he's like, wow, it's spring. And I'm like, oh, that means the other thing is coming for us.
Well,
are you going to stay in the States?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm here. You know, I plan to come home once I get my green card so that they don't give me troubles at the border. So I plan to come home whenever, January, December. But otherwise, I think I'm stuck here for a while now. This is going to be it for me.
Well, good luck for the winter, and I hope your happy light helps. But if you ever feel lonely or you ever feel a bit down, then just switch on, you know, the show, and we'll be there for you.
Yeah. I love the show. Awesome. I love you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Sne. It's so great to have you on. And Gilly, thanks for joining
us
again. It's always
amazing
nice to have
you
too.
Thank you.
And we'll catch up tomorrow, everybody. 6 a.m. bright and early. Cheers, Sne. Cheers, Mbulelo. Enjoy the day of cult behavior. And we'll catch up with you tomorrow. Very, very nice.
Send our love to your constituents.
Yeah.
There is no love here, only power.
All right. Cheers, everybody. Have a good day. Bye-bye. CliffCentral.com